Oh, yes. Ice champagne is a favorite drink of mine, strongly against my doctor's orders.
Never mind your doctor's orders, Mr. Wilde.
I never do, Mr. Carr.
The studio was filled with the rich odor of roses, and when the light summer wind stirred amidst the trees of the garden, there came through the open door the heavy scent of the lilac, or the more delicate perfume of the pink flowering thorn. Lord Henry went out to the garden and found Dorian Gray burying his face in the great cool lilac blossoms, feverishly drinking in their perfume as if it had been wine. He came close to him and put his hand upon his shoulder. "You're quite right to do that," he murmured. "Nothing can cure the soul but the senses, just as nothing can cure the senses but the soul." Dorian Gray frowned and turned his head away. He could not help liking the tall, graceful young man who was standing by him. His romantic olive-colored face and worn expression interested him. There was something in his low, languid voice that was absolutely fascinating. But he felt afraid of him, and ashamed of being afraid. Why had it been left for a stranger to reveal him to himself? And yet what was there to be afraid of? He was not a schoolboy or a girl. It was absurd to be frightened. "Let us go and sit in the shade," said Lord Henry. "Parker has brought out the drinks, and if you stay any longer in this glare, you'll be quite spoiled, and Basil will never paint you again. You really must not allow yourself to become sunburnt. It would be unbecoming." "What can it matter?" cried Dorian Gray, laughing, as he sat down on a seat at the end of the garden. "It should matter everything to you, Mr. Gray." "Why?" "Because you have the most marvelous youth, and youth is the one thing worth having."
"I don't feel that, Lord Henry."
"No, you don't feel it now. Some day, when you are old and wrinkled and ugly, when thought has seared your forehead with its lines and passion branded your lips with its hideous fires, you will feel it. You will feel it terribly. Now, wherever you go, you charm the world. Will it always be so?" "You have a wonderfully beautiful face, Mr. Gray. Don't frown. You have. And beauty is a form of genius. It's higher, indeed, than genius, as it needs no explanation."
"You smile."
"Ah, when you have lost it, you won't smile. Youth. There is absolutely nothing in the world but youth." Dorian Gray listened, open-eyed and wondering. A spray of lilac fell from his hand upon the gravel. A furry bee came and buzzed round it for a moment. Suddenly the painter, Basil Hallward, appeared at the door of the studio and made staccato signs for them to come in. They rose up and sauntered down the walk together. "You are glad to have met me, Mr. Gray," said Lord Henry, looking at him.
"Yes, I am glad now. I wonder, shall I always be glad?"
"Always? That is a dreadful word. It makes me shudder when I hear it. Women are so fond of using it. They spoil every romance by trying to make it last forever. It is a meaningless word, too. The only difference between a caprice and a lifelong passion is that the caprice lasts a little longer." As they entered the studio, Dorian Gray put his hand upon Lord Henry's arm.
"In that case, let our friendship be a caprice," he murmured.
Hallward looked for a long time at Dorian Gray, and then for a long time at the picture, biting the end of one of his huge brushes and frowning. "It is quite finished," he cried at last. And stooping down, he wrote his name in long vermilion letters on the left-hand corner of the canvas. Lord Henry came over and examined the picture.
"My dear fellow, I congratulate you most warmly. It is the finest portrait of modern times. Mr. Gray, come over and look at yourself."
Dorian passed listlessly in front of his picture and turned towards it. When he saw it, he drew back, and his cheeks flushed for a moment with pleasure. A look of joy came into his eyes, as if he had recognized himself for the first time. The sense of his own beauty came on him like a revelation. He had never felt it before. And now, as he stood gazing at the shadow of his own loveliness, the full reality of Lord Henry's description flashed across him. Yes, there would be a day when his face would be wrinkled and weazened, his eyes dim and colorless, the grace of his figure broken and deformed, the life that was to make